Harper Audio presents Would Like to Meet by Polly James, read by B. Holland. There is no disguise which can hide love for long where it exists, or simulate it where it does not. François de la Rochefoucauld, 1613-1680. Prologue. Dan lets go of both oars and searches the front pockets of his jeans, looking more anxious by the second. Shit, he says. Where have I put it? I take no notice, as I'm too busy lounging in the stern of the dinghy and trailing my fingers in the water. The sky is intensely blue, and I'm as happy as I've ever been. I'm about to get even happier, though I don't know that yet. Aha, says Dan. I found it. Thank God for that. I'm still not looking at him, because now I'm friend-spotting amongst the group of art students celebrating the end of finals on the banks of the Serpentine in Hyde Park. The sun's so bright, I can't see properly without the sunglasses I dropped overboard the last time Dan kissed me, so I just wave vaguely in the direction of the crowds. Someone shouts something unintelligible across the water, at the same time as a duck squawks and Dan says something equally unintelligible. What? I say. I didn't hear you. Oh, for God's sake, Hannah, says Dan, his dark eyes fixed on mine. Pay attention, will you? I'm trying to do something important here. The boat bobs gently up and down as he adds, I asked if you'll marry me. I stare at him, wondering if I've misheard due to that infuriating still-squawking duck, and then he tries again. I love you, Han. Marry me? Oh, my God! Yes, I say. Yes, please! I jump up and hurl myself towards Dan, just as he tries to pass me the small blue ring box that he's holding. But then the boat rocks and tips me headfirst into the lake. 30 seconds later, Dan has already dived in to rescue me from the weeds in which I'm now entangled and has lost my engagement ring in the process, as well as the boat, which is drifting away. 15 minutes after that, we've swum to the bank and are outside the cafe wrapped in blankets and toasting each other with mugs of hot chocolate, while being lectured on why you should never stand up carelessly in a dinghy by the owner of the one we allowed to drift away. That's the exact moment at which an off-duty press photographer takes our photograph, the one that appears in the local paper the following day, under the headline, Loved Up Art Students Make a Splash. 27 years later. Winter. Chapter 1. It's all the fault of the half-naked teenagers, or most of it anyway. They're staggering about drunkenly on the TV screen, and Dan is staring at them as if his life depended on it. What the hell are you watching? I say as I come into the room, bearing two mugs of extra-strong coffee to help prevent the hangover we'll otherwise be doomed to have. It's 12:30 a.m, and we've been drinking geriatric drinks all night. Aunt Pearl's way of thanking us for moving her belongings into her new retirement flat during the day. I don't think port and lemon agrees with me, and it certainly doesn't agree with Dan. It's given him short-term memory loss, judging by the fact that he completely forgot to wish me Happy New Year when we heard Big Ben strike 12 on the radio in the taxi that was bringing us home. Once we arrived, Dan got out of the car, unlocked the front door, and then headed straight for the sofa like a homing pigeon, one with opposable claws for operating remote controls and a tendency to go deaf whenever wives ask awkward questions. I try again. What is this programme, Dan? I say. God knows, he says, taking the mug I pass him without moving his eyes away from the screen. Brits in Ibiza or something like that. He must be able to sense my expression as he then adds, probably the channel Joel was watching before he went out tonight. It's so useful having a supposedly adult son still living at home whenever you need to pass the buck. I doubt Joel would be caught dead watching this idiotic programme. Not when he can view similar scenes any night of the week when he's out...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?